Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast, and I know all of you are very excited. So much is going on in the Big Brother house. Survivor's about to start back up, and today we are here to talk about none of that, because today we're once again talking about season 5 of Breaking Bad. And this week we are joined by a guest, and I'm sure many of you guys know him from Survivor Token Sheens or from his strategy blog on people.com. It's Stephen Fishback. Stephen.
Woo! Hey guys, how are you?
We're doing very well. Dom, what's going on, by the way? How are you?
I'm good. Stephen, is there something like rustling in the background of your microphone?
Oh yeah, sorry, that was me. I was rustling. I apologize. Sure. That was my ambient noise. So I didn't know they had Breaking Bad in England. That's made its way over there already, huh?
We do, however, have the internet, which is now to connect us with the rest of the world.
Even though you're on an island, that's incredible.
They had Breaking Bad in England, but it ended after season 1 because Walter kept apologizing to Hank. He turned himself in immediately.
Everyone's so polite over there. Yeah. Do you miss a lot of the cultural references?
Not that many. I mean, in the moment I do, but like when I'm reading reviews and stuff, then they get pointed out to me. So.
Right.
It doesn't really affect it too much.
Right.
Yeah, sure. So, Stephen, as you guys both know, Stephen's been on the show before. Last time we were talking about his game playing in Survivor Token Sheens. Today we're just going to be talking about Breaking Bad, but if you guys want to check that out, I just painstakingly went through the process of putting a list of all of our previous player interviews in the top right corner of the blog page. Yeah. So if you want to check that out, yeah, Stephen, you're right up there now, front and right on the blog page. So definitely check those out. And then I guess before we get into Breaking Bad, today, Stephen, what's been going on with you?
You know, I've just been working away, just been watching a lot of, this summer, I watched all of Breaking Bad. I had injured my shoulder and I was, looking for something to do with my time while I was, unable to do a lot of other things. And I started watching Breaking Bad because, it has just, people on Twitter are very, very excited about it. And I was transfixed. I would watch 6 episodes at a time. You'd sit down to watch one. And then, at 4 a.m., I would, come to, halfway through a season. So that's it. This is what I've been doing with my summers. I've been watching Breaking Bad, and now I'm ready to talk about it.
Oh, awesome. Well, before we get into the actual show, what besides just Twitter, is that what ultimately just made you decide to watch? Because I'm sure you've been hearing about it for a long time now.
Yeah, it was just everyone is always – the people on Twitter are really excited about a lot of different shows. And, for the most part, I'm kind of cynical. But I just was I remember the premise from 5 years ago, which sounded really cool, which is that, the high school chemistry teacher starts manufacturing meth. And I actually worked for a company that designed the website for Breaking Bad when it first launched. So, I feel an intimate connection with it as a result. So I was I might as well just see what it's like. And then, as I said, 3 months later, I came to in a cold sweat. How about you guys? How did you get into Breaking Bad?
Well, actually, one of my good friends just pushed me to watch it after during the first 2 seasons as they were airing. He was like, you really got to watch this show. And so as season 2 was in the middle of airing, I just sat and did what you did. I just completely caught up in a day and a half. And then I got to watch the end of season 2 play out in real time. And Dom, I think I just kept begging Dom to watch it. And I think that's ultimately what happened, unless I'm mistaken, Dom.
Yeah, after your previous experiment of trying to get me to watch The Wire, I was kind of unenthusiastic. But then I just gave in, watched the pilot, and then just blasted through 4 seasons worth of episodes in about a week.
Wait, did you not like The Wire?
No, what? Could someone explain this to me? Why is this some hit phenomenon over there?
We need to do a separate podcast where we try to figure out what's wrong with Dom such that he doesn't like The Wire.
For real? No, I've been getting on him for as long as I've known him. I don't know what else, what more I need to do. And Dom, I don't know what other endorsement apart from Stephen Fishback you could want to watch the show.
If anything proves the superiority of American culture, it's right here. It's that the Americans can appreciate The Wire, and apparently British can't. This is a real rousing patriotic moment for me.
Likewise. So, Stephen, actually, because you marathoned that so quickly, and I assume your memory of it is thus relatively fresh, at least comparatively, did you have any favorite or episodes from early on, or maybe something you thought were underrated?
Well, I mean, because I watched it all at one sitting, it all kind of blurs together, actually. I don't have, the sort of distinct sense of episodes that, I'm sure if you have to wait, I was actually thinking about this, if you have to wait every week to, see narrative developments, I feel certain dynamics have an opportunity to sink in more than, for me, when it was all just sort of, seasons 3 and 4 were, just one like long tussle between Gus and Walt, and like the, you know, some of the maybe the ups and downs were lost, given that I was just sort of, you know, watched again like in one sitting essentially.
Sure.
But I, you know, season three or four, I thought just like the, in general, they just the subtlety of Walt's characterization, I thought, really exceeded anything that has come before or after in terms of like how like fragile his ego was while he was trying to be, you know, I mean, that great scene, you know, which is probably one of everyone's favorite scenes, when Walt is like, you know, I am the one who knocks. You know, what's so awesome about that and so remarkable is not like what a badass Walt is, but like really like how fragile he is at that moment. Like in season five now, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, like he's a real badass, but like in season four, I think, is that, or three, it comes right after he's been like totally humiliated by Gus. So it's like this assertion of his ego and this like desperate plea to overcome his like, you know, dramatic insecurities.
I was going to ask you then, if you don't have any specific episodes or moments you want to get into, what was your general take on the first four seasons as a whole?
It's incredible, right? I mean, I really think it's like one of the, I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and I thought it was like, you know, one of the most subtle explorations of like masculine identity that there is in any medium, just in terms of like a man kind of reconciling himself to death and to, you know, failure and to like, you know, the impossibility of ever truly achieving, you know, what he maybe at some point imagined he could achieve in life, and, you know, kind of like undergoing the stresses of work and being yelled at by his boss, and then that kind of reflect, you know, impacting the people around him, and, you know, the ephemerality of goals and how we deceive ourselves. And I just like the whole, you know, all of seasons one through four, I thought, and I actually, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this, I've actually kind of, while season five has been really exciting, I've kind of found it to be a little bit of a drop off.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I know a lot of people think it's like the greatest, but.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
One thing you hit on there that I really like, I think it's the idea that Walt always thought he could do more. And I think if the five seasons of Breaking Bad we've seen so far, any indication, I would go so far as to say Walt kind of knew he could do more with his life, given how he's kind of behaved this whole time, where he's just super confident that everything's always going to work out for him.
Right, exactly. He is, but like, you know, in the beginning, what was so powerful about that was that he was like a bully to his students, you know, mm-hmm. like. His like bruised sense of competence, you know, in this like really limited sphere, and, you know, being a high school chemistry teacher, like made him like actually quite a horrible teacher. Like he was kind of a dick to his students.
Yeah, well, he has where he's not going to pass that one guy. The great story by me.
no, I remembered.
Okay, yeah, I feel like people have seen it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. What are your favorite moments? I mean, let's, open this up to...
Oh, sure. Well, some of mine, particularly, I liked the scene in the junkyard with Tuco, like that kind of showdown with Tuco. And then also, I really liked the whole Tuco storyline, quite honestly, with him using whatever that substance was to, like, escape from the building.
That explosion.
Right, yeah. I thought that's always stood out to me. And then... one of the cold opens that we're going to be talking about, the Say My Name cold open, where it I think is stands out as probably the greatest cold open in my mind, although I did just watch it. Yeah.
That was one of my favorites as well.
I think one moment gets overlooked a lot just because of everything else that was awesome that happened in the same episode was in Salute, the episode where Gus goes and blows up the cartel, where Walt's talking to his son and breaks down in front of him. I just think the dynamics between the two of them, and especially Walt Jr.'s reaction there, was really transfixing, I thought.
Yeah, and I may not have even fully remembered that had I not, as I mentioned, watched that yesterday. But speaking of season four, Stephen, before we get into season five, of course the biggest thing that happens towards the end of that is Gus Spring dying, and Gus was, of course, a very, very big character in throughout the scopes of season three and four. So what did you think about that? Because I thought, personally, Gus was going to be around for the long haul.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I guess. I mean, it makes sense, right? If the narrative was always set up to be like Mr. Chips becomes Scarface, like at some point Walt truly has to be in control in order for him to be Scarface. I thought in season four it became like much clearer that Gus was going to die, right? Like in season three it seemed like, I mean, you keep on hoping that they're just going to work it out, right? Like that, Walt, there's so much money on the table here for you. Like I would actually be like screaming at the screen. I got so invested in it. I've never been a huge Jesse fan, so I always, you know, in season three, got the big rivalry between Gus and Walt is that Walt wants to cut Jesse loose, right? And Gus wants to cut Jesse loose, and Walt keeps sticking up for him, and he, you know, sabotages Gale in order to, you know, spare Jesse, and he, like, kills those drug dealers in order to save Jesse. Like, Gus keeps on, you know, creating situations where Jesse should be dying, and Walt keeps on undermining those. And I not ever having been a huge Jesse fan, like, just, like, kept on wanting Walt to be like, just kill the freaking little whiny drug dealer and, you know, achieve the millions that you're capable of. But obviously that dynamic shifts in season four when, like, Jesse is more, becomes more, you know, necessary to Gus's operation, and Walt becomes the sort of erratic, marginalized one.
Sure, yeah, definitely. Now, with Gus kind of, like, coming off the board, so to speak, what did you think about that, at, like, finding out that season five was, in fact, going to, well, I guess you weren't following it that closely then, but when the news broke that season five was happening, where did you think it might be going? I guess for you, it'd be, like, after you finish season four, knowing season five, you're about to watch it, what were you kind of anticipating as you were entering that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say it's the last season. You know that, you know, Walt has to die. Well, I guess, like, there's some speculation, right? Does Walt have to die? Like, in my mind, Walt has to die.
That's interesting by itself, first of all. I don't personally have it so securely like that.
Really? Like, you don't think, like, in order for this, like, drama to be, like, complete, you don't think it has to end with his death?
Well, don't you think in some way it would be a more satisfying ending for Walt to be alive but having lost everything that matters to him, and to be, like, not necessarily dead, but maybe on the verge of death due to the cancer coming back? I think it'd be a better completion to the show to see Walt as a completely broken man rather than just give him the easy out of being dead.
A fate, like, worse than death, perhaps.
Huh. Right. Yeah. That's interesting. That's very interesting. Like, so then in that scenario, like, Skyler and maybe one of the kids would die or something. Or they'd, like, leave him. A kid has to die, right? Can we agree about this, that one of the kids has to die?
I've had Walt Jr. on my radar for a long time. I don't know how it's going to happen, but he seems to be just kind of getting snowballed into this thing and has all these questions, and no one's ever given him a straight answer. And right. I feel like he's just going to become collateral damage, and that's I think it honestly could become perhaps snap Walt out of this kind of, like, Heisenberg trance for a perhaps, if you keep sinking deeper and deeper into this. In part two of season five, I could see that easily being a way to perhaps make him start regretting things very quickly and trying to get out of it, albeit too late.
I was going to say, I think Holly's successfully staying under the radar, so good play by her, but Walt Jr. and Skyler need to watch their backs, I think.
The only thing about Holly is that she, like, in just in terms of, like, narrative structure, right, like, the series begins with Skylar being pregnant with Holly, and that was one of, like, the key motivating factors that drives Walt to, you know, pursue meth, that he needs to, like, provide for his pregnant wife, protect his children, you know, give his children a future. And so then if, like, something he does leads to Holly's death, like, that might be, like, you know, she's essentially this, like, this symbol right now of, like, innocence, but also, like, familial responsibility. And, like, if something happened, like, that would lead to her dying, like, it might be, like, you know, the most horrible thing that could happen, right? By the way, like, Walt Jr. is, like, a fully fleshed out character. Like, in some ways, like, him dying is, like, a narrative possibility in a way that, like, Holly dying is just, like, pure horror.
Also, Gus's big speech in the middle of the desert concluded with him telling Walt that he would kill his infant daughter to kind of, like, hit the message home as hard as possible.
Right. That this is something awful that could happen to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, as we enter season five now, there are a couple of loose ends, mostly in the form of Gus's laptop, that Dom, I know when we talked about this the first time discussing Breaking Bad on the podcast, kind of thought this was not the best way to go about it. I was curious what you thought about that first episode, you know, with the magnets and everything, trying to do all that, yeah.
Well, that really sets the tone for this season, right? Is that, like, there's these, like, giant, completely, like, almost surreal schemes that they pull off. Like, I thought it was good. And, like, I mean, again, like, I'm not the hugest fan of this tone for the season, but, like, you know, in terms of setting the tone as, like, this is the season full of, like, you know, big heist capers. Yeah, no, really, like, in that, like, very, like, you know, American genre, no offense, Dom, of, you know, like the great, is it an American genre? I don't know. Anyway, of like the great heist or like, you know, the great criminal caper, like using a magnet to like, you know, wipe a computer. It's just like so completely unreal and like outside the bounds of realism, I guess, that it's just, I thought it was like interesting. It's kind of like fun to watch, right? It was like a little bit cartoony.
Yeah.
But like it's definitely like come off the rails quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, to use the going with the train metaphor, that's the same idea. And I would say the train thing is decidedly very American. It reminded me honestly of like Back to the Future 3. So, perhaps just because of the train.
The train heist is like, I mean, then it becomes like basically a Western. Like that's like.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is more of a universal thing, but that is part of why maybe I didn't like it so much. It did seem kind of discordant. Like, Walt, Jesse, and Mike go on these happy, crazy adventures, and it's easy to, like, overlook the macabre tone that should really be underlying all of it.
Yeah, no, I've always found, like, one of the virtues of the show to be that it is very, like, you know, while these incredible things are happening, it has been very grounded in these realistic, you know, both realistic characters and realistic scenarios. And, you know, to a certain degree, like, Walt has superpowers, like, with that exploding bag that you mentioned, Colin. But, like, to me, it was, like, that's what I haven't liked about this season, is that it's, like, just a little bit over the top and cartoonish. And then, like, as a result, some of the motivations become a little bit more cartoonish as well. Like, you know, Walt has become, like, this, like, epic badass, but he's also not, I think, as, like, richly nuanced a character as he was in the past. And I think I have felt like the transformation from sort of, like, you know, troubled man to, like, supervillain has been a little bit too fast.
Okay, well, I was going to say it's like he's becoming less human. It just has less qualities to even be talking, to even be seeing on screen because he's so transfixed on becoming this supervillain.
Right.
Another part of why I decided, I think, was that I think it's fine to have something like the train heist as the center of one episode, but when you put that squarely in the middle of the premiere where you're supposed to be tying up loose ends from the previous season and opening up new storylines for the rest of the current season, it feels kind of odd to have this big thing in there where it's kind of self-contained. It doesn't really play into the rest of the season at all.
You mean the magnet or the...
Yeah, it feels like it wasn't something they had to write into the plot to make everything else make sense. It was just something they were kind of enamored by and went with it without really... like building it into the rest of the season at all.
Right. But there's been a lot of just like big, I mean, like it seems like this whole season has been like moments like that with like Skylar pretending to like go crazy and like, you know, the kids going to live with like, you know, Hank and Marie, like and planting a bug in the DEA. It's just like, I mean, none of these things are, you know, within sort of the realm of like, you know, normal human interaction. It has like just become, I mean, cartoonish is really the only word I can think of.
Yeah, I was thinking perhaps that the magnets and then the train thing were not only good ideas, but also could be examples to demonstrate kind of this new thing that we've been seeing, which is not Walt coming up with the big solutions, but Jesse. And I don't know, honestly, yet what reason that's for, but I thought at least theoretically that could be just some kind of reason for us to start giving Jesse more credit as like a thinker.
That's interesting. Did he come up with a magnet?
Yeah, magnets, bitch.
That's oh, yeah.
Did he also up with it thusly, yeah.
Yeah. What about the train? Was that him as well?
Well, it was his idea with the water replacing the stolen methylamine.
Oh, yeah.
Because with the straw going with his drink, he was, when they were plotting it all out, he had his drink pulling, which we all did when we were 8.
Yeah. I mean, I really like the scene, and this is not, like, this is sort of, like, the converse scene, where, like, Walt and Skylar are at dinner, and Jesse's, like, sitting between them, and it's, like, so uncomfortable. Like, to me, that was, like, classic Breaking Bad right there. You know, and I'm sure that's why it was there, was as sort of, like, a nod to, like, you know, the domestic politics of the first few seasons. But, like, it just, like, you know, this incredible human dynamic that's like, you're just, like, sitting there, like, cringing in pain.
Yeah, just chugging on his water, just keeping that going as long as he can.
Yeah.
Right. I thought Jesse's character this season has been largely simplified as well, given that he's now seemingly the competent one who's coming up with all these great ideas, and we have almost none of the kind of, like, meth-induced craziness that we saw in previous seasons. I think that kind of took away from, like, the realness of Jesse's character, if you want to call it that as well.
I agree with that. I mean, he's, like, become more of just, like, a counterpoint sketch to Walt. And it's, I mean, you know, in some ways, like, that's like the, again, like the whole series arc, it's like really started with as a Walt focused drama. And, you know, slowly over the next few seasons, like, it kind of like broadened in scope, and you'd have like, you know, Hank would have his like, his arc with like getting injured and like, you know, his recovery, and Marie had her arc with, you know, stealing, and Skylar obviously has had quite a few arcs. But now it's kind of like coalescing again down to the single point of Walt. And I do agree that it like lacks for Jesse, you know, a lot, like, cause he's like, their dynamic was like the driving interaction of the whole thing. And now Jesse is like just this kind of like side character who's like either coming up with a brilliant idea that Walt is not, or like kind of like looking at Walt like, are you crazy? You know, every time Walt is acting crazy.
Yeah. Jesse, I think, has become over time just more and more competent as Walt has become less and less competent as like a human.
Right.
Well, to jump ahead a bit, as over the course of the season, as Walt's like megalomania has escalated, we've seen Jesse's role downplayed more and more, to the point where in the past few episodes, he really hasn't played that significant of a role. And part of that is due to the plot where he's bought out of meth business and is just trying to go back to his normal life. But part of it seems to be that he doesn't really have a significant role to play in the story anymore. So where do we see Jesse's part in the story going from here as we go into the second half of season five?
I mean, I've always felt that, right, I think probably a lot of people have felt this way, so, that like the final confrontation for Walt has to come from Jesse. And maybe that's like not, maybe it has to come from Skylar because it is a family drama ultimately, but it's like, it seems nice that like Jesse would in some way bring Walt, you know, bring Walt down. Like at some point he would be the one to like break and like that would end Walt, because like it's always been like their loyalty and their camaraderie that's kind of been the driving force of the series. And like you really know Walt has transgressed if he like somehow is able to violate that.
There have been a lot of interpretations of this whole Icarus analogy and who's flying too close to the sun and who's going to get clipped, basically. And there's been Todd theories and now there are Walt theories circulating everywhere. But I've always thought, or at least I've thought for a while, that Jesse might be the one, as he's becoming more competent and Walt sees him like this guy could just take over if he wanted to. Perhaps that could be something we see, where being too good at cooking meth could ultimately cost him, and being too good with problem solving and business tactics could cost him.
So that would be like Walt's like final debasement is like killing Jesse?
Potentially. I think it could be something that could totally serve to just make us hate Walt.
Right.
For even more so than him killing Mike. And really not have any questions at the end of the series as to whether Walt was a hero or an anti-hero or a villain.
Right. He was like fully a villain because he was willing to kill Jesse. Yeah. That's interesting.
Okay, yeah, just an idea. I want to back up actually a little bit, because another thing that we need to see developed for season five to really get going is, because Skylar gave most of their money away to Ted Beneke, Walt needs to start cooking again, and this is going to be kind of a tall order since they lit the lab on fire and everything. And so they came up with what I thought was a pretty good idea, which was this Vomino's Pest concept. What did you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, it was fun, right? Like the idea that, the basic idea is that they go into a house that's being sprayed for pests, and because no one is physically allowed in the house, and it's expected that there's going to be toxic chemicals coming out of it, like it's like a fine place for a meth lab. I like that, like the idea of like the rove. It kind of like in some ways like harkens back to the RV, because it's like still like a mobile meth lab, you know.
Totally.
And it also like there's like some kind of imagery of infestation, right? Or like. Because, you know, I think it was last episode, or maybe it was the episode before that. I think it was the last episode where they had that, as part of a montage, they showed all of the different houses being covered for pests. They had, like, a sweeping shot of, like, some suburban tract where, like, you know, the pests covering would come down, and it would come up, and it would move to another house. And it did kind of seem like it was, you know, this meth addict is, or this meth production is sort of like an infection as well, or an infestation as well.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I thought it was good for practical and for symbolic purposes.
Yeah, that was basically, I wanted something that I would believe, and I totally bought it. And this also led us to introducing Todd, who, and, you know, the rest of the highly amenable folks over at Vomino's Pest. But Todd is the one that we end up seeing stand out. And I wanted to start talking a bit about Todd now. What have you been thinking of? You know, he started off very early on. I think actually his first lines were him telling Walt that he'd swept the house and found a nanny cam and whatever. So what do we think about Todd now?
Right. It's interesting. I mean, like the Todd Walt mentorship is like, it's interesting that it's like much less fraught than the Todd Jesse mentorship. Like, Walt has almost become like a better teacher in a way, in the way he interacts with Todd. Like, he's like nurturing in a way that like he never was with Jesse, and like encourages him to get it right. You know, and maybe that's because Todd is much more deferential to Walt and is kind of like the ideal, like, I will do whatever you tell me to do student.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Jesse, I remember very early, was still trying to convince Walt to put his signature, like, chili pepper in the right. final product and stuff, and right. he was very combative with him about the whole process.
Yeah, I think part of that is that when Walt was originally introduced to Jesse, Jesse was, like, the meth addict who didn't really have a direction in life, and I think that impression's never really left Walt, whereas when he's first introduced to Todd, it's as Todd is already an established criminal by this point, and so there's less of like this mental block for Walt to get around. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. And I think that like maybe it also is a testament to like how far Walt has come, you know, like he's much, you know, more even keeled, you know, he's less, well, that's probably not a good description of him. But he's like, you know, he feels more in control of his like evil, you know, faculties, right? Like he's like in his mind now he is the kingpin, you know, so he doesn't have as much to prove.
Yeah, totally. What do you think, you know, they've decided to keep Todd alive, at least for now. Do you see that playing out in Todd's favor, I guess?
It's interesting. I mean, Todd, like, I've never really thought of Todd as, like, some crucial character.
Oh,
it's
really?
Interesting that you have, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, well, tell me what you think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it seems like as Todd's importance in the story has increased, Jesse's has, like, correspondingly decreased to the point where it seems to be an open question of what Jesse's role is going to be now. Like, if they somehow wrote Jesse out of the show at the end of this half of season 5, it would actually make sense of the story going forward, whereas I don't think that ever would have been true at any point in the previous 4 seasons.
Right.
So do we see Todd supplanting Jesse, or how do we see that playing out?
Well, definitely he's like a counterpoint to Jesse in some way, in terms of like his relationship with Walt. Maybe there's like a Walt, maybe a Todd Jesse face off that has to happen or something. You know, like the girl in action movies always like fights the girl villain, you know, because they're like of a stature with each other. Like maybe that's what's getting set up.
Oh, okay. That's important. Who you got if they end up showing down?
I guess I would put my money on Todd. He's so, you know, he's so implacable. Jesse is too much of a human.
Your team, Todd.
Well, I mean, I just think he would win. You know, if I had to, like, bet on a horse, I want the other horse to win, but, like, I mean, I'm going to go with the stronger horse.
Yeah, I think the smart money is probably on Todd. He seems pretty ruthless.
Yeah, and he kind of even looks like Jesse. He has kind of his physicality a little bit in terms of, like, the blonde hair and just, like, their build is somewhat similar.
Okay, actually, the next big, I would consider this a big character that we've met this season, but Stephen, perhaps you wouldn't, is Lydia. What do we have to say about Lydia so far?
Right. She's great, right? Like she's a true nut, and like in some ways is like the perfect symbol. Like again, like I think like symbols, but like is the perfect like symbolic representation of where Walt is in terms of like, you know, she has much bigger scope and is much crazier than anyone he's dealt with before, right? Like she like whereas Gus in a way was regional, like Lydia is international, but whereas Gus was very like controlled, Lydia is completely erratic. So I think she's good. I like it. What about you guys?
Okay. For me with Lydia, I'm not so sure that Eliza Orleans is ever or will ever end up trafficking methylamine. But I think if she did, this is basically what it would look like.
She does have that sort of like Eliza fanaticism. But I think Eliza would be much more on top of her shit than Lydia is.
That's entirely possible. And this idea actually led me to forcefully then recast all of Breaking Bad with Survivor players, and I didn't really love too many of them, but the one that I do want to tell you that I did love, playing Gus will be Yao Man. I love that against type. I think that'd be fantastic stuff. And also,
Gus isn't as pervy as Yao Man is. He's, I feel like he's not as much of a lech.
Is Yao Man pervy?
Yes.
Oh my god.
The one I thought was inspired was Walt as Coach.
That's really good. Yeah, just that like fragile ego and that like desperate need to be like grand in some way.
I feel like Coach is the only one with the sense of self capable of this like grandiose transformation, basically.
And he's totally someone who would be like, I mean, Coach doesn't probably have the follow through that Walt does, but it's still like perfect in terms of the psyche.
We had Cochran as Walt Jr. as well.
That's perfect. That works so well.
Just like, yeah.
Awkward, but like, you know, really idolizes his dad. Yeah.
He's got like nothing but unanswered questions and no one tells him anything, but then he just gets smoothed over by, like, in Walt Jr.'s case, a car. In Cochran's case, he gets the hidden immunity idol for a little bit. And, like, it's right there.
Oh man, that's really great. I love that.
Back to Lydia. Like you mentioned, she's kind of like this frantic mess, although very recently she's gotten it together and found a way to not get herself killed, basically, and also now has this idea of shipping out to the Czech Republic. So where do you think this is all going to go, and do you think maybe we'll see this kind of international business dealing be the center of season 5 part 2?
Well, definitely in montage, right? We'll probably get like a meeting with someone in Czechoslovakia and like a montage of like, you know, planes flying to like, yeah, with some like pop song playing in the background. I just think with Lydia, you know, her plans are not bad. They're also very practical, right? She came up with like robbing the train, or not the how to do it, but she came up with like the source of it. Like, she has these, you know, this great knowledge, and, you know, she was more right than Gus was. You know, she's the one who found the bug on the barrel. She's just like so unreliable, and like she just like, I mean, in some ways it's her extremity that's her downfall. Like, that was her first quality, right? With like, in terms of her meeting with Mike, and she's like, they both have the same problem. We have these 9 guys in jail, and her solution is like, let's kill them all. And his solution is like, let's like pay them off in a much more like, you know, and it turns out that her solution actually was the right one, but it's like the more extreme, more cartoonish, like more, you know, just like more moral consequences in a version of it. And I feel like everything she does is going to be a little bit like that.
Yeah, I think it was the more like reactive response to it, which is like, well, these guys could talk, so why don't we kill them to make sure they don't, rather than, well, if we just pay them, they won't.
Right, exactly. And it's like the more ultimate thing too.
Yeah.
It's like there's no middle ground between, you know, they exist and killing them.
Yeah, I really like the role that Mike played in that storyline as well, because if this were Breaking Bad, the action movie, you can imagine Mike just going around with a AK-47, just killing everyone he can. But
right.
I think it's good to have Mike, who we've come to see as like the hardened hitman, actually step back and take a rational response.
Mike has had a great arc from being like, I mean, when we first meet him, he's like, he's Saul's sort of like errand boy, you know, and then they kind of like pull the reversal on us, and it's like, oh, he's actually been working for Gus this whole time, and like Saul didn't even know that.
Yeah, no, Mike has been, well, let's talk about Mike, because Mike is, of course, I've been getting a lot of requests to place Mike as my greatest non-main character of all time, and we'll be getting to that. Mike certainly has been.
Oh God, it has to be Gus. Oh my God, who are these Mike people? Jeez.
I think it's recency bias for Mike.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Okay, well, I still have Omar above both of them. Spoiler alert.
Oh, you would do, wouldn't you?
Omar?
Am I crazy? Omar from The Wire?
From The Wire? Oh, see, all right. Yeah, well, we can talk about that later. I thought you meant this show, though. But yeah, I disagree with you. Yeah.
I have Gus above Mike from the show, too. I think Gus is the best character. I would probably put, I might even have, like, Saul as a character. I think Saul is phenomenal. And Bob Odenkirk, of course, is great.
When Saul first came on the show, I was a little bit disappointed, actually, because you know, obviously I'm incredibly, like, a stickler for something, but, like, I just thought he was a little bit too wacky, like, given this, like, incredibly intense drama that was playing out. Like, it was, like, you know, he was, like, too much of, like, a cartoon character. Apparently that's
like
the one metaphor I have at my disposal. Yeah, but, like, anyway, he, now, like, because the show got so heavy, it's, like, such a welcome levity that, like, I've really, like, obviously, like everybody else, I really love him.
I think the role was originally written to be much more like a sharp businessman, and then Bob Odenkirk just killed his audition, from what I understand.
Really?
I think so.
That's an interesting story. I mean, because he's not, like, an intuitive casting choice. For
no, he's a comedy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are several. Bill Burr is a comedian. The giant fat guy, LaBelle Crawford, as Huel, is a comedian.
Who's that?
The two guys that stripped down Ted, basically, are both professional stand-up comedians.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Everyone in Saul's sort of entourage.
But yeah, well, also, I mean, Bryan Cranston was the lead, or was the dad on Malcolm in the Middle.
Right.
Yeah, so, okay, well, speaking about Saul, then, what do you think Saul's kind of end game is here? Do we think Saul's gonna make it out of here alive?
Saul also this season has just sort of like fallen off the grid in terms of, you know, in this storyline. Like sometimes he'll pop up as like, you know, like as like a narrative convenience, basically. Like last episode when Jesse was like, well, you know, Saul told me what happened, which actually seems like kind of an out of character move for Saul to tell Jesse something like that.
I don't necessarily mind Saul popping up just as you said, a narrative convenience, because I'm not sure what other role he could play. Like, it seems to me that his role is one that only works as a kind of minor character that's there for occasional comic relief.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I mean, especially now when it's, like, descending into, like, madness, it makes sense that, you know, he would, like, his, like, presence doesn't even, like, match the stakes involved anymore now, right? Like, he's so, like, pay off your traffic tickets that he's, like, not gonna, you know, and they're, like, you know, infiltrating prisons. Like, it just, like, doesn't make sense.
He's very much shown himself to be someone who, when things look like they're about to get sketchy, will just bolt. So it doesn't make a ton of sense for him to be, I would say. Like, right. his character would be in line with someone who's just not around when things get this heavy.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, well, do you think then that Salt's going to just gradually kind of, like, fade out, or are we going to start seeing more of him now that Mike's gone and we are running out of characters, I guess?
Well, have you heard the thing that he's going to get, like, a spinoff? Like, the rumor that he'll get, like, a prequel or a sequel or something?
I heard something about that, which I wouldn't... I have two heads about that, I guess, because I really like the character, and I'm sure I have him rated higher amongst even just my Breaking Bad characters as most people do. But I also, I don't want to jeopardize anything that, I don't want it to be anything that could taint the show.
Oh, did you just say the Star Wars prequels, Colin?
No, I've actually never seen Star Wars.
That's crazy.
It's craziness, I know. I don't even have like a desire to see them, quite honestly. I don't know what it is.
This is how I feel about The Wire.
Okay. That's because you're a racist, though. Shots fired on the podcast. All right. So let's move on now. Let's talk actually a little bit about Skylar this season, because we've seen her just kind of delve into this craziness and like, you know, now she's like walking into the pool and everything. What do you think about how far this is going to go, Steve?
Yeah, they're definitely, I mean, like the Skylar thing, it's like that has been, you know, one of the roughest and, you know, most real. You know, she just seems to, like, carry so much of the raw emotion for the show. You know, and you like, that classic scene where, like, Walt and Skylar are, like, spooning in bed or whatever, and Skylar is just, like, has this look of, like, horror and fear on her face. You know, she just, like, really captures just that sort of, like, the reality, you know, as opposed to the kind of unreality, you know? Like, we're in, like, the La La Land of, like, you know, murdering people in prisons and robbing trains and, you know, using giant magnets. And then you get back to Skylar and it's just this like incredibly raw human emotion of like, you know, fear for her children and, you know, hatred of her husband. And it's just like this like real, and it's a, where could it go? Right. Like that's where that's got, maybe she kills Walt. Like I'm already surprised. Like why hasn't she already killed Walt? I guess she doesn't want like her kids to grow up without a father, but like she's also said that, you know, she wants him to die. So.
Yeah, she wants the cancer to come back. I guess she doesn't want the blood on her hands.
Right.
But yeah, we forget, I think, a lot that these characters, even when they're not on screen, because it's usually Walt on screen, they're off, the writers write them as if they're off still living their normal lives. And Skylar's always been the one to go home to the kids every night. And Walt has his own apartment and he's always, you know, staying out places overnight for days at a time. But she's there every night, and she's seeing these ramifications and, like, having to talk to Walt Jr. all the time about this stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's very – I think Skylar's very much the practical one. She's the one saying, Ted, you must pay the IRS back before you start going back on your business and buying a Mercedes and everything. Because she seems the most aware of the real-world consequences should this all go bad.
And she, what an incredible actress, you know, she is, just in terms of how she can communicate so much with just a few facial expressions.
Yeah, it's amazing how acting works. Dom, Dom, what do you think about Skylar now?
I don't know. I was one of these people who never really liked Skylar during the first four seasons, and there's been a lot of like debate on the internet about that, because I think there's a large section of the fan base who seems to watch the show just to see Walt trafficking drugs and things getting blown up, and they have this kind of misogynistic backlash to anything that Skylar does. But I think she's really come into her own this season, and I've grown to enjoy her a lot more as a character.
Yeah, sure.
I was actually surprised by, like, where her arc has taken her this season, because, like, I felt in season four, you know, with her sort of, like, her getting the car wash and her kind of helping with, like, the drug, you know, the laundering the money, I kind of felt like she was going to more, like, break bad, you know, that she was going to become more of, like, a co-villainess for Walt and really sort of, you know, descend into that role. And instead she's become, like, much more of an antagonist to Walt, you know, a domestic antagonist, but, like, nonetheless, like, quite in opposition to him. But I really expected her to, like, I thought that she was going to, like, that he was going to pull her down into sort of his corruption, and it hasn't happened at all.
So did I, totally. And it was, I'll admit, primarily because I read that thing about the teddy bear eyeball motif, where it just seems to, like, corrupt people. And with Skylar, we haven't yet, at least, you know, she certainly broke bad to a certain degree, far more than she was in, like, season one, where she's, you know, now she starts out cooking Ted's books, then gets in on this whole meth thing, and now is using a car wash to launder, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year or whatever. She's certainly not maintained her standard of ethics that she was there with at the beginning. But nonetheless, she's certainly not gone nearly as far to the deep end, or to the dark side, I guess, as I thought she would have. I thought by now she would definitely, that's what, when Dom and I last talked about this, I honestly thought she would have killed someone by now. Not necessarily Walt, but someone.
Right, just to, like, participate in, like, the whole, you know, awful corruption of everybody.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Has the eyeball come back at all? Like, I'm really interested in that symbolism, but I have, you know, it's obviously, you know, you've got to really be aware of it in order to find it. Has anything happened with that?
I've been looking for it. I have not seen it. But I'm sure there. The problem is, I watch all these episodes in the back of my mind, knowing that there's imagery right in front of me that I would have no way of understanding yet.
And the color pink is supposed to be really significant too, right?
Right.
Like, there's
The teddy bear was pink, and then I was thinking, Jesse's last name is Pinkman, of course, and then Holly, little baby Holly, is always dressed in pink.
Well, that's it. It's like there's something about the people who are wearing pink that's, like, super, like, meaningful. Holly being, you know, the best example, but I think there's also been times when other people have been wearing pink, and it's, like, you know, had some significance, but I can't say what.
I swear, I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, Walter's last name is white. It's a color. There are several different, and Heisenberg is always dressed in black, and when he's in Heisenberg mode, he's got that black hat and the sunglasses and a black jacket all the time. Right. I really feel like there's something to call, I swear to you, and this is going to sound weird, I also feel like there's something to hair and facial hair and something weird like that. There seems to be, you know,
free. Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is yet, but it seems like, I don't know. I feel like there might be something there.
Well, I mean, you know.
No. Dom's a doubter.
It seems like you're reading far too much into very small, insignificant things.
Well, like, which ones? The hair I can see being extreme, but, like, are there others that you think are not? I mean, the naming is, like, very clear, right?
Well, I think the color stuff is more far-fetched than the hair.
The what stuff?
The whole stuff about Jesse suddenly being Pinkman and Walter White, and it just seems very, it seems like a stretch. Feels forced.
But the pink is, like, right? Like, there's a lot of, like, very noticeable pink imagery that, like, they focus on. And I mean, like, this show is, like, nothing if not very deliberate in the way that it expresses itself, right? Like, in terms of, like, the shots that they take, you know, they shoot on film. Like, there's all of these shots that are, like, you know, that are from, like, far away or, like, from, like, you know, you know, there's a lot of shots that are, like, from behind the barrier in a certain way that, like, kind of increase this sense of, like, narrative tension. Because, like, you, like, have your gut reaction as a viewer is to think that, oh, this is from someone's perspective who's watching them. Because it's, like, usually, like, at a weird angle and it's from far away. But, you know, often it's just, like, a weird shot, you know?
Yeah,
that's definitely something which does stick out to me. Like, there are a lot of shots of where you see the action taking place almost as if it's, like, behind a screen or behind bars.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a lot more worth a discussion than some contrived thing about, oh, Jesse's last name is Pinkman, and there's this, like, five-season-long epic arc of symbolism about what colors mean or whatever. That seems a bit...
Really? Like, you can agree that, like, the bear is pink, right? Like, the bear gets a lot of, like, very notable... Like, items have a real symbolism in this show. Like, you know, the bear's eye is something that recurs over and over again. You know, what it means, like, is, you know, obviously up for debate. You know, there is noticeable use, like, deliberate, like, the fact that, like, someone is always dressed in one color, like, that's not, like, some accident of wardrobe, right? Like, that's, like, someone is making those choices.
No, I totally agree. And, Steven, you'll learn very quickly Dom hates everything.
I want to convince this, you know, this unbeliever.
I think there's a temptation to try and look too far into stuff like this. I mean, for instance, we see Marie wearing purple a lot of time, and you could, I imagine, come up with some excellent, ingenious theory about what this, like, the deep significance of Marie wearing purple all the time. But in reality, I don't think that's what the writers intended, if they even intended it to mean anything at all.
Their entire living room was purple. The chairs were purple. The pillows were purple. At the Schrader house.
Right, but I think that's a matter of just making it aesthetically pleasing to the viewers. I don't think there's any kind of deep meaning behind it.
Yeah, I agree with you, that you in terms of, like, the hair stuff. You can say, like, oh, it's pushing it too far. Like, to some degree, you can, like, read poetry into anything, right? Like, there's this famous, like, the Professor Stanley Fish, who's this famous literary theorist, had this experiment with a class of his once, where when he was teaching his class, like, he left on the blackboard, like, the notes of the previous professor from their class, which was, like, not about literature at all. It was about, like, economics. And then he had his class, like, analyze this poem, and they treated it as a poem, right? They treated it as, like, why these words are in this order. So to a certain degree, like, you can treat anything that way. But I don't know. I think there's, like, when there is something that is getting as much focus as, like, I mean, you agree that the bear's eye is a symbol, right? Like, that's not that far-fetched.
Sure.
And so, like, why not the color of the bear if the color is something that's, like, very, like, is reflected in, you know, a lot of other places? You know, if pink is something that stands out in so many ways, like, why not? Why can't that be – why wouldn't it be deliberate?
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with you to an extent, but I think taking it as far as I think Colin would want to do is
– Yeah, that may be fair. I feel like perhaps Dom is reacting to my innate desire to just give everything way too much meaning on this show and, like, have every little thing be some masterfully crafted design from day one.
Right.
I object to it more given that Vince Gilligan in particular has explicitly said that they don't plan a lot of their stuff out in advance, but often they'll come up with one kind of theme or idea that they're attached to and work everything around that, and they don't really know how that's going to play out until they're in the process of putting it all together. So.
Right.
Like, there are people who want to say that you don't need, like, authorial intent for things to have meaning like that, where if you can find this meaning in, like, random references to color or whatever, then that's important regardless of whether the writer intended it to be. But I don't agree with that view. I think that when you have it on the record that a lot of this is kind of improvised, it doesn't really make sense to, like, imbue it with any more significance.
I'm somewhere in between those two camps, like, in terms of, like, you know, things do, like, take on significance over time, right? Like, and, like, if, like, the all, you know, to some degree are, like, you know, one's job as a critic is to, like, analyze what the show means, and you can never truly know what the author intended. But obviously that debate is, like, basically endless.
I just love conspiracy theories.
Yeah. No, I'm much more on the side of, like, authorial intent is the ultimate arbiter of, like, significance. But the pink,
I mean, like, his name is freaking Pinkman, and Walter White, like, I mean, the Walter White is obviously also, like, a pun on Walt Whitman, and, like, that's been, like, very clear,
and that just seems like maybe, like, Vince Gilligan's, like, a Walt Whitman fan or something, but, yeah.
That's not a coincidence, Tom. I'm sure they make several things up, many things up as they go. They don't make the guy's name up before they, like, they have that solid from the beginning.
Okay. I think this is a
apology accepted, Tom. All right. So I actually feel like we kind of skipped over Mike a little bit because Mike was such a big character, and Mike is now in a lot of discussions for, like, one of the best characters in TV history, perhaps.
Really? Mike, that seems unreasonable.
Well, I feel like it's a function of Mike being on one of the best shows, and, like, I think if Mike was on 24, for instance, that may not be the case.
Right. But that's definitely recency bias as well.
That's unfair though, because you wouldn't have a character like Mike on 24.
Right.
I think Mike is made much more effective because he is the juxtaposition of so many people on the show that are either, most of whom are just, like, lashing out and acting immediately, and Mike always seems to have, like, kind of a calculated response to things and know what he's doing at all times.
Mike seems to be much more a type than, like, a lot of the other characters, like, in terms of, like, his originality as, like, a, you know, creation, like the sort of like old guy who's seen it all and can solve all the problems, you know. And like, yeah, like the granddaughter thing is there, but like every character has like, you know, every character like that has like their one thing that they care about, and his happens to be his granddaughter, you know, like that Mike. I mean, while I've enjoyed Mike, I've kind of felt like, I don't feel like he's like some like great, you know, original character like springing forth on the screen.
That's fair. Yeah. And sure. Perhaps, people, I think a lot of people like to give credit to understated actors, which is fair or otherwise, which is fine, because that's how they do it. Mike's performance is deliberately very understated.
Right.
I agree that Mike as a character isn't particularly original, but I think Mike is better than a lot of the characters that conform to that archetype, and I think part of what makes his character so appealing to the audience is that he does embody a lot of that sort of recognizable stuff that we've come to identify in characters like that.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's probably fair.
What I like with Mike, at least, is that they gave him, within the story, a way to kind of get all of his affairs in order, which is getting tipped off that the DEA was coming for him, basically. And he leaves the $5 million to Kaylee on her 18th birthday in the safety deposit box, which is a solid 18th birthday gift, by the way. That's gonna be a nice surprise.
Is she going to get that anymore, though, or is that money going to be confiscated?
That's a good. Well, it's not. They were going to take his $2 million that was overseas. I don't know that anyone even knows about that because the lawyer's now dead.
But the lawyer knew about. I mean, they caught the lawyer in the act of delivering that money.
Oh no! It was his next trip that they caught him.
I know, right, I know that. But like, you know, if they asked him any questions about what was going on in those safety deposit boxes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but the DA knows about that money now. Right, there's no chance that Kaylee's going to be like getting a yacht on her 18th birthday or whatever.
All right, fair enough.
Maybe this is the spin-off, like what Kaylee does in her 18th birthday to get that money.
I think we're onto something there.
It's a spin-off like Walt Jr. has his massive breakfast empire, and like Kaylee is his trusty enforcer.
Yeah.
All right, so I just want to hit again a little bit on Mike's death, because I feel like this is a very big deal for the show, because, you know, when we were talking about Saul, I said we're now kind of running out of people here that we know as big characters, and I don't know if it's going to be, we're going to see a lot more out of people like Lydia, out of people like Todd, out of people like Saul, who's going to gain a bigger role or whatever. But Mike, with Mike, as went with Gus, is now a very noticeable gap, I think, in the characters that the story is really centered around in terms of the actual meth game. It's now down to basically Walt and Jesse, and Jesse's on his way out the door.
Right.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? Well, how are we going to see this kind of get filled in?
You mean you think they're going to add more characters in the next season or the next half season?
I don't know. Potentially the guy that they're now dealing with out of Phoenix is going to become a bigger player. Who knows?
I doubt it. Sorry, Stephen.
No, go.
Well, I can easily see them introducing some peripheral characters just to add to the plot, but I don't think there's time to introduce anyone on the level of someone like Michael Gus, even if they wanted to.
No, there are only 8 episodes yet.
Yeah, and they've really got a lot of wrapping up to do.
Yeah, well, actually, you know what, guys? I think now is as good a time as any. Hank, as we see at the very end of episode 8, finally starts doing the math on Walt as he's in the middle of taking a dump, which I'm sure is where many people do their best thinking.
That's a great scene.
Yeah, well, he finds the Walt Whitman book and does the. He sees the note from Gale to his other favorite WW, and this is and you know, we get the flashback of Walt saying, "Oh, you got me." And so now Hank is officially kind of on to Walt. And I think, first of all, as we begin to kind of look ahead now to what we might see coming up, I think it's pretty fair to say at this point, and you guys tell me if you disagree, Hank is now sold completely on Walt being his guy. I don't think Walt's going to be able – and I think it would be dissatisfying if Walt had a way to, like, talk himself out of it or to talk Hank out of it.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you that, like, that's you know, that scene was a transition point. Like, that's not going to be something that there's, like, coming back from. Like, that's, like, the next 8 episodes are him, like, trying to stay ahead of him, right? Like, and doing what he needs to do in order to stay ahead of Hank in some capacity.
I'd be disappointed if the question of what having an explanation were to arise in the next few episodes, because it seems like something where Hank it should never really be in a position to confront Walt about it, at least for the time being. It makes far more sense for me to have Hank know what's going on, but not be able to question Walt about it, and he doesn't have the resources anymore to launch some kind of big investigation into it. So this is a solo effort on his part, which has to be conducted behind the scenes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that'd be very interesting. I mean, is that even doable? Him taking down Walt by himself? Now that he, you know, ASAC Schrader, can he pull a little, pull some weight, I guess, or pull rank and kind of get reopened this now that he's got a more solid thing? Because I feel like when you're in a position like him, he can just take this back and say, oh my God, I just had this aha moment. Doesn't matter where I was when it happened, but I think my brother-in-law, Heisenberg.
Yeah, I think one line they could go down is, well, Hank now is in this kind of tough position because he saw what happened to his boss for even failing to recognize some basic stuff about Gus Fring. Now, his own brother-in-law is like head of this massive drug empire, but it obviously doesn't reflect well on him, even if he does manage to wrap things up in the way he wants to.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. And that was something that, like, Walt had even made explicit in an earlier episode to Skyler, right? Was that, like, Hank would look like a fool if she ever turned him in. Like, it would basically ruin his career. Because it was, you know, his own brother-in-law. I just want to say that I thought that seems like the perfect encapsulation of Hank as like a character, because he's like this total, you know, loudmouth ass, but he's also like super cop. So him coming to some incredible deduction while like taking a shit is just like totally of the flesh, but also like great, you know, amazing mind.
Sure. I agree. Looking at it from Walt's end, though, a lot of people have said that this was an unrealistic way for Walt to get caught, if you like, because Walt has been like assiduously deceiving Hank with these elaborate schemes for the past few seasons now, and for him to be undone by randomly leaving a book in the bathroom, it just seems like kind of an anticlimax.
I've thought about that too, but it's also like a sign of hubris. Like, it's like, you know, Walt has gotten like sloppy, and I really the scene when they were cooking meth. When Walt and what's the guy's name, Todd, were cooking meth, was like it was like showing him being sloppy, right? There was all these little things that they were doing that you know, Jesse would never do, right? Like he tossed the bag onto the scale and it fell off, or like it took them, like, he was pouring the hydrochloric acid and like some of it spilled out. And like, you know, they took them a little while to get the steam vent on the thing. It was just like little showing, like very like the minutiae of him slowly starting to fuck up, and I kind of felt like this was like a good example of that.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect way for Walt to get caught. Actually, like from the first moment we met Gus, like we see Gus instantly put the read on Walt, saying you're not a cautious man at all, like,
right?
Separating himself from Walt, and then with Mike as well, Mike instantly realizes that Walt is dangerous, not only because he's gradually turning into a psychopath, but also because he's just not a careful person. So I think for Walt to, like, if this is a big game of chess, it makes far more sense for Walt to hang his queen and get punished because of it than for, like, Hank to outwit him in some masterful way.
Right, because Walt's super, that's a great point. Walt is super smart, but he is just careless. And, like, so it's, like, his carelessness that undoes him.
I felt for a long time, basically, I never underestimate the human's desire to self-destruct. And I felt for a while like Walt's been trying to get caught as soon as he starts feeling too comfortable.
Well, there was that scene in, like, at dinner, right? Like,
right, yeah, yeah.
Well, when, like, Walt gets drunk and, like, starts being like, well, Gail probably had a boss. I doubt Gail could have done this himself.
Right, like, you've got another guy out there. You're not done looking, basically.
Yeah.
But now, even when Gus gets caught, it seems like you mentioned, he's just been getting so sloppy that it seems like he's kind of, like, trying. I would not be surprised if something, I think for sure, what, you know, of course, what ultimately ended up getting caught was leaving that book in there. And it seems like if Walt were really thinking, he would have taken that out a while ago, looking at it and immediately, of course, knowing that it's from Gail. Right. It strikes me as something that Walt would not have overlooked unless it was on purpose. Like, and I'm not saying he directly has been wanting Hank to catch him, because I don't think he's going to enjoy the consequences when he is caught, if he's caught. And that's not what he's looking for, but I think he's looking for, like, that high, that, like, thrill. Knowing that the chase is on, that he could get caught at any moment, but that he's cleverly outmaneuvering his captors every single time.
Right.
This seems to be like a recurring theme for Walt, where he wants a recognition as the best in the business, and yet he obviously can't reveal that to him because he's going to get banged up in prison. Like, if you think back to season 4, where Hank is convinced that he's caught Heisenberg, and Walt tries to convince him that he hasn't, despite the fact that it makes no sense logistically for Walt to want Hank to be on the case anymore.
Yeah, it should be great news for him.
Right.
What did you guys think of the first scene of the season?
Oh, it's interesting, because of course, at the time, I didn't really understand the full ramifications of it. I was trying to do the math very quickly of, okay, he's got hair and he's got a beard now and he's in New Hampshire and he's Mr. Lambert. Because we don't see the 51 thing with the bacon until I think episode 3 or 4 of season 5. And at which point, when I was rewatching it, the 52 in this bacon at the place in New Hampshire made a lot more sense. So the opening scene, I'm guessing, is perhaps where the final episode of the entire series will begin. That's what I'm thinking.
So you don't think that's, like, the next arc is, like, him fling? I mean, because he did something with guns, right? Like,
he bought an M60.
Right. So, like, clearly he's going to regulate some shit.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, okay. I don't think that – I think we're going to definitely see beyond that, but I think we're going to get more leading up to it first.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, he's in Canada? Is that right?
No, he's in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
Live free or die. There was a lot of talk about free where I think one of the waitresses says something about free to him, and then when he takes a few episodes later the Pontiac Aztec to get returned – and the insurance has covered it all. The guy who fixed it says zero balance, like nothing's better than free or whatever. And then, of course, New Hampshire state motto, live free or die. The episode was called Live Free or Die. So I'm anticipating that we're going to – the part two of season 5 is going to be Walt trying to stay free, basically.
But Dom probably thinks that was all an accident. Like it was
exactly.
Just – yeah, there was no haphazard.
But what I will say about that is that Vince Gilligan has said, I guess minor spoiler alert for anyone who's nitty about that sort of thing, Vince Gilligan has said that Walt is buying the gun at that point for protection, not necessarily for himself, but for someone, which makes you think, who is he trying to protect? Could it be Jesse, maybe? Like Skyler and Walt Jr.? I think a few different options there.
Or which overthinking fans is he trying to mess with when it's clearly protection for himself? I really feel like the big question is, Walt Jr., will he ever find out about any or all of this, about what his dad's been up to?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Well, elaborate on that.
Well, I mean, whether Walt ends, like, dying or he ends, like, a ruined human being, I mean, especially if he ends as a ruined human being, especially if that's his end, like, that ruination has to come from his family turning on him, right? Like, that's, like, the ultimate ruination for Walt. Yeah. Sure. Well,
I guess kind of the way he would go about going on not knowing about it is if he dies before he really finds out. It's just like a pawn in some scheme.
Yeah. Right. That's like right. That's the alternative.
Yeah. And there so is like, yeah. I guess your point. He's saying yeah. I guess we're all kind of saying we anticipate shit hitting the fan, and Walt Jr. is going to find out. Okay. I think that's a safe prediction. Yeah.
The point I'd make is that if Walt Jr. does find out, it's not going to be. Like a revelation that's unique to Walt Jr. I think it's just going to be in the course of everyone finding out that what the story is with Walt, and he's just going to be a part of that.
He's kind of like fallen off too. I felt like there was a moment in time when Walt Jr. seemed like he could be getting his, like, you know, they were very careful in the early seasons to always have like a scene of Walt Jr. like feeling further and further disaffected from his father. And, you know, like you mentioned Colin, and I guess you both mentioned that great scene where, you know, he has that confrontation with his dad, and like now that's just sort of like disappeared, like all of that. And I kind of feel like, again, like that's a weakness in the season, is that you're not getting the sort of like rich family tapestry at all. Like, well, you know, there's like one scene of Walt being like sullen at Hank and Marie's place, but like it's almost like Maggie Simpson, you know, now where the writers are like stuck with this character and they're like, well, what the fuck are we gonna do with Maggie, you know?
Yeah, there's this one fairly simple scene of Walt yelling at Skyler, but we don't see him consoling himself over bowls of Raisin Bran anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe, like, that, you know, there's no more room for that in the show, but, like, maybe there should be.
Well, I think part of the problem is Skyler has the very natural human response, I would say, which is, if you're going to keep cooking meth, I'm going to get these kids out of here because when shit goes down, I don't want them to be around. And so for that, you know, we end up just not seeing as much of Walt Jr. unless he's just super tilted at Hank and Marie.
Right. No, I mean, it makes sense that that's true, but in terms of the story, but I feel like it is a worse story for it, for the lack of richness.
Okay. So as we move on in season, you know, looking ahead towards season 5, part 2, what kind of terms do you think Walt and Skyler are going to end on? I take it, if you think this ultimate defeat is just going to be his family, who he's been doing this the whole time for, turning on him is the wrong word, but so you think it's going to end kind of poorly, I gather, between them?
I think it, I mean, Yeah, I mean, I'm like torn about whether it's Jesse or Skyler who like is ultimately his undoing. I mean, it's probably not Hank, right? Like Hank is sort of like the MacGuffin almost that like, you know, the, or the reverse MacGuffin that kind of like sets it in motion. But like Hank is not the guy who catches Walt, right?
I don't know. I think I'm trying to draw a comparison without spoiling any other dramas that people may or may not have seen. I honestly feel like it could be. I think a very powerful thing would be Hank literally catching Walt in the act and then deciding maybe having some change of heart, which I don't know. But I guess I'm just not ruling it out that Hank is in fact the one who catches him, because it seems like Hank's the one who's done pretty much all of the getting any actual work done on the entire Heisenberg case.
I mean, I'm sure, like, in terms of the actual, like, narrative itself, like, Hank might be the one who, like, slaps handcuffs on him or something, who ends up, like, putting the bullet through his head. But, like, in terms of, like, the person who, like, actually undoes Walt, like, it seems like that has to be someone more, you know, like Skyler or Jesse, who's, like, who's more associated. Like, or at least, like, as Hank closes in, one of them has to, like, you know, fully turn on him before he can be arrested.
Right. Okay. So Hank would be like the mechanism by which Walt gets caught, but not the direct cause of it. So it would have to be, so Skyler ratting him out somehow, or like Hank capturing Jesse and then Jesse spilling the beans or something like that.
Yeah.
Might it be such a situation where Skyler rats out Walt in such a way that she and Holly and Walt Jr. then kind of get to live happily ever after, which is effectively what Walt's kind of wanted all along.
That's interesting. I mean, that could happen. I wonder if, like, the writers have even decided. I read some interview with Vince Gilligan. I mean, I'm sure they know, like, the very, very end, but I wonder if they're, like, entirely certain of the semi-very end.
Mm-hmm. Like, how they're going to get there and the themes they want to use to get it there.
And what colors people will dress in order for that to happen.
It's all being very...
in the most satisfying way, yeah.
Right. Going back to Mike quickly, I think one of the criticisms that a lot of people have had of this season is they felt that Mike's death and the events leading up to it were kind of unrealistic, because from the very first scene we see Mike at the end of season two, he's being portrayed as someone who's clinically efficient, who's cool, calm, collected, he doesn't make mistakes, he always knows what's going on. But it seems like at the end of this season, like he ties up Walt with a twine which Walt's able to break out of. He seems like underestimate Walt. And just not be aware of the possibility that Walt might actually want to and be able to kill him. And I don't know, what did you make of it?
I most felt that when Jesse was like, I'll bring you the bag. And Mike was like, Jesse, I don't want you to bring the bag. Like, why wouldn't he want Jesse to bring the bag? He trusts Jesse.
That, yeah.
Yeah, and then like for Walt to be like, you know, first he asks Saul, who says no, you know, for legitimate character reasons. Then Jesse offers him, he says no to Jesse, and he accepts Walt, like, he knows that Walt is erratic, you know, he doesn't want anything to do with Walt. It just doesn't make sense that he's going to, like, trust Walt to do something like this.
Well,
like, that's, like, go ahead.
Well, I think, well, my theory was there was that he doesn't, he assumes that the DEA is still trying to tell him he doesn't want Jesse being put in any unnecessary danger,
right.
Whereas Walt is both less likely to be, like, recognized as part of his plan by the DEA and if it all does go tits up and Walt ends up getting caught, then it's a better outcome for Mike personally than Jesse getting caught is.
I mean, I got that as well, but like it just seemed, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I think Mike also was a bit complacent. Mike, of course, knows that Walt knows that Lydia also knows the name. So I feel like he was probably had his guard down a bit there, because there's no real... Like, Walt doesn't have to kill him if he's not willing to give up the names.
Yeah, that
was a great scene.
It did seem kind of weak, though, like... just after he's killed Mike, he's like, oh, by the way, I just remembered Lydia has a name, and you kind of expect the Curb Your Enthusiasm music to be playing then.
Oh, I thought that was so perfect. It was just such like a, you know, shows what a fuck-up Walt is. Walt,
exactly,
he's trying,
yeah,
to be this, like, badass gangster. He's like, he just is not it, you know? He's not Mike.
No, I was thinking, it seems like something, quite an oversight on Walt's part, which is why I think when he immediately comes over and realizes that it's like, oh, I just did this major thing without even thinking it through fully, and I think that's more, apart from just the absolute fact that I could have gotten the names from Lydia, is, oh, I'm deteriorating now, like, I just made this giant unnecessary move.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I liked that when Walt apologized to Mike, it wasn't in a mocking way, he kind of dropped the Heisenberg persona at that point, it was just Walt, the middle-aged science teacher, looking lost at the fact that he's just actually killed somebody.
I think he was sorry that he actually killed Mike.
Yeah. Well, It's like that. He can't even assume the role of this badass gangster proper. He's a fuck up. He can't do stuff.
It was a really nice death scene too. Mike's last words were like, "Shut up and let me die" or something. Or die
let me
in
die
peace.
In peace. Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. So Steven, if you are Vince Gilligan right now, and you, I assume, know how Breaking Bad is going to end. Prior to the beginning of this, who are you telling that it's going to end? Because I feel like this is, you know, do you know what I'm getting at?
Oh, in terms of the characters?
Yeah, like who, not necessarily in terms of the characters, but just who, the writers, whoever. Are you telling anyone how this is going to end, or do you want to kind of keep it to everyone in production? Of course you're not going to leak it to people who watch the show or whatever. I feel like this is a pretty big secret to be keeping.
Right, it's like George R. R. Martin, right, the Game of Thrones guy, has revealed to the producers of his of the Game of Thrones HBO series, like how the whole thing is supposed to end. Like, you know, presumably, in case something happens to him, you know, we'll have like some kind of narrative completion in our lives. That's interesting. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was thinking for that exact same as the George R. R. Martin thing, which is. If I'm Vince Gilligan, I don't want this ending of any way other than how I've designed for it to end from this whole time.
Right.
So I think at the start of season 5, I probably tell only Bryan Cranston how this ends. Pretty practical reasons, I think, which is so he knows what to be doing basically with his character and like what his character's ultimate motivations are going to be. But also, Bryan Cranston's pretty involved with the show, and it's like directed, and he's a producer, and he has directed a couple episodes. And I would trust him as like an artist with that kind of thing. But I certainly wouldn't want to tell other people.
The writers have to know, though, in order to like set up things that are going to pay off down the line.
Right. No. Apart from the people who need to,
apart from the writers, right?
Who need to know for the sake of actually writing the show.
Maybe his like wife.
I don't know. I'm not telling anyone close to me. I want to make them. You gotta keep that to yourself because then you always have leverage. Or what you might do is give out like a bunch of fake endings to the people you know, so you can if any of them get leaked, you can know who to not be friends with anymore.
Right, it's like the Tyrion strategy in Game of Thrones.
What
do you make of all the, you know, obviously they've had a lot of like gangster movies playing on TV, and that's been a very noticeable trope throughout the season. Like, you know, they had Scarface on, you know, Walt says like memorably, like everyone dies in this movie, don't they?
Yeah, they've had, Scarface, the Caine Mutiny, and then when Mike was getting his apartment raided, it was, well, oh man, Dom, what was it?
The Big Heat.
The Big Heat, yeah. Which is, for people who aren't familiar with, Dom, you linked me to an article with the information about this, but do you have it handy in front of you about that actual movie? Because it seems, it's pretty important, I would say.
For people who aren't familiar with it, and don't worry, I'm not either, I just have the plot synopsis here. The plot synopsis for The Big Heat, in case you're wondering, is, I'll quote here, a crime syndicate unravels when a homicide detective doubts an official verdict of suicide and finds out that the dead man had been living well beyond his means.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it's the money, right? Like, that's going to be what undoes Walt, is where the money's coming from?
Yeah, right. This is symbolism for dummies, basically.
Right. But you kind of think that it just happened to be on the TV when they were filming that scene.
Jeez.
He does, no, I'm telling you, there are aggravating debates where I'm standing by the hair thing. There's something there. You don't... It's not a coincidence that they have the three main leads are all bald.
Well, maybe Albuquerque has an epidemic of male pattern baldness. I don't know.
I did think with Mike that there was something significant about the baldness. Like, here's like an actually competent, you know, old bald guy. I'm not as sure about the Hank thing.
Okay.
This theory is going to unravel in season 5, part 2, when Walt Jr. starts getting alopecia and Skyler starts shaving her head. It's all going to fall down around your knees.
It's going to prove it, right? Like, hair loss is a deterioration of et cetera, et cetera.
All right, so Steven, I think if there's nothing else, I would like to ask the big question. How do you think all this ends? And I you know, you hit on Walt dying earlier, but do you have anything more specific?
I kind of do think that there's going to be the shootout. You know, I really feel like there's going to be this, you know, and probably with that what did he buy? M16, you said?
M60.
Probably with that, you know, that there's going to be just some, like, epic shootout. He's going to kill, you know, everyone around him, and it's going to be a bloodbath, and he's going to die at the end. Because, like, in terms of, like, where it's going, like, you know, in terms of the theme, we know that Walt has to end in ruin in some way. I think in terms of, like, the tone, it has become more and more surreal and outlandish. I just feel like that's got to happen. And I'm not committing to that because I'm also, like, would be very happy if it was, like, a more subtle and quiet, you know, ruination. But, like, that's sort of where my gut is.
So there's no way you could see this ending well for him?
that would be something.
I'll take that as a no.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, the thing for me is, it's like, the show is called Breaking Bad, and he's saying Breaking Bad, like, the implication there is that someone goes from good and starts turning evil, and right. It's not called Breaking Bad and then recovering and turning back good again. It's, like, we're just going to see, like he said, Mr. Chips turn into Scarface.
Right.
And I just anticipate Walt going further and further down this path, and I'm not 100% sure he's going to die, although I would be quite confident that if he is not dead, he's going to wish he was at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Just to touch on that theme quickly, one thing I wanted to ask you about Stephen earlier, but I forgot, was what did you make of Walt essentially quitting the meth business just before Hank finally finds out about him? I thought that was a really nice touch because it shows that no matter what he does at this point, he can't escape the consequences of his actions. Like, even if he does sincerely want to get out and go back to living his normal life as he sort of seems to delusionally think he can, like, that's just not going to be possible for him.
I agree with you. I really thought that was great, that he's like, just as he gets out, he suddenly the final chase starts. Because it is this kind of like, I have nothing better to say than what you just said.
So do you think he gets drawn back into the business then? Because it seems like we have 8 episodes left to play with, and not all of that can be shootouts and car chases and whatever stuff they want to fill that with.
I would be surprised. I mean, I guess there was the... I guess he was interested in the possibility of international shipment, right? And like, that's why he didn't kill Lydia.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of think that the next part is not going to be so much about the mess. And I think I would be surprised if that like did. I guess we talked about the possibility of the international element. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I can see part two being more of a character study of Walt and all the other relevant players involved than like an in-depth analysis of the meth trade or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot more character development and really understanding motivations behind it. So we really have like a sense of completion with each character as the series comes to a close. I think they're, you know, part one has gone pretty slow because they normally have 13 episodes. Now they basically have 16 episodes for one season.
Right.
And so I think we're going to get a lot more of that character development. And I think we're going to have I feel like we're going to be pretty satisfied with not so much like feeling great for every character, but happy with that, satisfied that the story was told well.
I think that's absolutely right. That it's going to, you know, there's a lot to wrap up, and I think they're going to probably spend, you know, 8 episodes doing it. And some of that will be, you know, family drama, and some of that will be guns blazing.
Yeah, sure. I don't think it's going to be like Lost, basically, where they're still, everyone's pissed about the ending.
Yeah, I agree. I really feel like that this is going to be like, especially, you know, here they were working towards an ending the entire time, whereas like Lost, they were, you know, very clearly making it up as they went along.
Well, if Vince Gilligan is to believe, they don't actually know how things are going to end yet, which on one level is kind of worrying, but on another...
Vince Gilligan is not to be believed.
On another, it's impressive that they're able to do all of that without that kind of long reaching scope. One question I have for you, Stephen, is depending on how this ends up, where will this rank for you on your list of like all-time TV shows?
Well, I felt that seasons 1 through 4 are like maybe the best ever, you know, and certainly with The Wire up there is like it's hard. It's like ranking things is inevitably like sort of a fool's errand. Like you can never really, you know, like what about The Simpsons? You know, what about Seinfeld? Like I kind of like am not a huge fan of rankings. It's like ranking the greatest Survivor player. Everything is like so, you know, but it's definitely one of my favorite of all time. As I mentioned, I was disappointed with this season. I felt like it didn't really match the sort of richness of the previous seasons. But seasons 1 through 4 are certainly top. Seasons 3 and 4, my God, like, you know, greatest seasons of all time, except for seasons 1 and 5 of The Wire, or 1 and 3 of The Wire.
Yeah, well, I got 5 in there, too.
I actually didn't like 5 at all.
Oh, I was a big fan of Marla, so. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. 5 for me became a little bit cartoonish as well with like the ridiculousness of that like fake serial killer. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that's not to spoil The Wire for everyone.
Yeah, now you spoiled it, there's no point in me watching it.
Shut up, Dom. You're going to watch it.
That's like the premise of the season.
Nothing major. Still very much worth watching.
Yeah. I agree that they probably won't screw it up as badly as Lost did, but I'm not sure they could, because with Lost, I just think it's such a different TV show that no matter how Breaking Bad ends, unless they just jump the shark in some really obscure way, I think that it's always going to be satisfying to a select group of the audience, whereas I don't know many Lost fans at all who are pleased with how Lost ended.
I didn't see Lost ending. I watched two seasons of that, and
you were smart to get out when you did.
Yeah, it seemed too made up. Like, I was really into it, and then just like the feeling that like no one really knew what was happening. Just like I was like, I can't do this. This is insulting me.
Yeah, well, I feel much. You just keep getting slapped in the face with that show. But Steven, so optimistic for part two of season five of Breaking Bad?
Yeah, I am. I am. I think we got a big ending ahead of us. You know, very excited. Not sure I'm gonna be able to wait as long as it is. You know, 6 years or whatever until it comes out. But.
Yeah, something like that. I think we are all out of stuff to talk about today. So, Steven, thank you very much for coming back on the show, man.
Guys, it was great talking to you as always. It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Oh, hey. So where can people find you, and what are you gonna be up to for the Survivor season?
Follow me on Twitter at Steven Fishback. That's StephenFishbach.
Very nice.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very good at spelling that. Or I've got a blog on People, where I will be blogging about the Survivor season. The end by me.
All right. Excellent. Hey, well, thank you very much, Steven.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Take care. See you guys.
Bye-bye.